Well, welcome, Aubrey. It's great to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I grew up in northern Michigan. My parents are high school sweethearts. They went to Traverse City when there was only Traverse City Central. There wasn't any other, right? My mom comes from farmers up here a few generations back in Buckley and Traverse City area. My dad's family moved up here when he was about 14, from the Lansing area where my grandparents had, been growing up. But my great grandparents had family property up here, so that kind of brought them up. The rest of the family stayed down there. So I grew up in this area. When I was really little, we lived in Cedar, and I was supposed to go to Glen Lake, but I'm an only child, so I'm a summer birthday. So my mom, I made it into kindergarten roundup at 5, and my mom was like, "Nope, we're staying home another year." So I never actually attended Glen Lake. But then I went to Elk Rapids for kindergarten, first, second grade. And then we moved to Benzie County because my mom was working as a community mental health nurse for Benzie Manistee County. And she was driving 80 miles one way from living up in Acme all
Whoa.
the way to Manistee a couple times a week. So that was like, she did a year of that and said no more. So we moved to Benzie. It was about halfway. So I grew up here. I graduated from Benzie in 2004. I went to Kalamazoo College. I actually had really wanted to go to U of M for engineering. I thought I wanted to be an environmental engineer. Looking back, it was kind of more what my family wanted me to be. But
Interesting.
my best friend in high school, Nick Masinski, he and I actually won a student Emmy for, there was a television production class called BCTV at Benzie. And we had won an Emmy for this little thing that we had made. And he, our senior year, I remember he didn't take AP Chemistry. We'd taken AP Bio together the year before. And I said, "Why aren't you taking AP Chem?" He said, "Because I'm going into political science. I don't need an extra science credit. I just need one." And I said, "But you're so good at it." He said, "Just because I'm good at it doesn't mean that's what I want to do." He's like, "Aubrey, you don't want to be an engineer." He said, "You want to be a journalist. You love BCTV." And I, maybe should have listened to him, but I still made it there anyway. It took the long way around, but I didn't get into U of M for engineering. U of M makes you decide if you want to go literature, science, and arts, or school of music, or school of engineering, and that's what I applied to. I didn't get in. I got waitlisted, and then I didn't get in. And so my backup was Kalamazoo College, where I could do,
It's a good choice.
yes, it was. I could do 3 years. It was a 3+2 program. 3 years of liberal arts with them, and then 2 years at a university, and then you get a degree from both. So that's what I did. I got a major in chemistry and a minor in math from K, and then I went to U of M and I got an engineering degree. And I was just gonna minor in Spanish because I had the extra room, but it was only two classes to get a major then a minor. So I also have a third bachelor's degree in Spanish.
Whoa.
In the amount of time, it was 6 years that I could have gotten a master's, but and about halfway through, I knew I didn't want to be an engineer, but it was kind of too late to change tracks. So I just was like, I'm just going to finish, prove that I can, get a degree, and move on. And so my first internship, before I graduated, about a year before from U of M, was up here in Traverse City at a local nonprofit that was working in water journalism. And the head guy was kind of like, "Well, you're an engineer, so you know how to do data." I'm like, "Kind of. I can do
Sure.
spreadsheets. Is that what we're talking about?"
Right.
And he said, "Yeah, sure." And so that was kind of how I got the foot in the door. But because it was so small, like if I had gone to a big news organization like a National Geographic or something, I would have been fetching coffee for a year and a half,
Sure.
But because I went to a small organization, I could pretty much do whatever I wanted. So when my data project was on hold, I said, "Can I write something?" And then it was like, "Can I write something else?" And then it just kind of progressed from there, and I ended up being the managing editor there after 6 years. And I was in charge of our social media campaign that actually got cited by The Guardian as they had a top 10 list of water people who were tweeting about water, and Matt Damon was on because he had been a co-founder of water.org, and they were down at number 8 and we were number 4. So
Whoa.
I beat Matt Damon at that, so that was kind of exciting for our Twitter campaign. So that's kind of how I got into journalism. I took the long way around.
Okay.
But yeah, I moved back after college, and so I was working up in Traverse City, and then I was done there in 2015. We had started the Betsy Current newspaper. So my partner, Jordan Bates, he is a Frankfurt boy, grew up in Frankfurt, graduated from the Leelanau School. His good friend, Jakob Wheeler, owns the Glen Arbor Sun. We call it our semi-sister publication in Leelanau County. So Jakob started the Glen Arbor Sun when he was 16 or 17 years old. So it'll be turning 30 next year.
Wow.
Yep. And so it's a big anniversary for them. And he started it literally back when it was print, cut, paste.
Wow.
Put it through the school printers and copiers.
That's
and make
what
a bunch
we
of
do right now.
We're setting up for a mimeograph machine, I think.
Wow.
So it's really progressed from there. But that was his high school summer job that, you know, how he helped to pay for college. So, so then what happened was in 2005 and 2006, Jordan and then their other mutual friend who had gone to the Leelanau School with them, Richard Tabor, they said, why don't we do this in Benzie County? So they did it in 2005, 2006. I was still in high school at the time. Excuse me, I was still in college, and Jordan and I were not together. And I remember working at the Roadhouse as a hostess, and during the slow times, I would read the Betsy Current. And okay. I would think to myself, while I'm in engineering school, not really wanting to be in engineering school, I remember reading it and being like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to own a small town newspaper?
Wow.
And you fast forward, Jordan and I got together in 2008, and then, but the paper had gone on hiatus because Tabor had moved to Chicago and it was just too hard for the guys to keep doing it. So they did it those two summers and then it went on hiatus. And then when Jakob moved back to the area in 2014, he had still been doing the Glen Arbor Sun, even though he was living in Minnesota and then Chicago. And his dad was like doing the deliveries and stuff here, but he was still working on it remotely.
Okay.
He moved back and said, you know, I need a second income. Can we restart the paper? So they did a Kickstarter for $3,500 to get it off the ground.
And that was like 2014?
It was 2014.
Okay.
And back then I was still working for that other news organization. So I was kind of like, this is the boys' thing. I won't interfere too much. I was doing deliveries, but by 2016, I would write occasionally, but Jakob had moved on and gotten a different job and was going to continue with the Sun, but not be with the Current anymore. And so he, so then I became the editor officially at that point, but I had already been on the sly helping them behind the scenes before that. So we've been doing it together since then.
Wow. So what's your goal this year for a Benzie Current?
Yeah. So first, maybe I should just describe for everyone what the paper is if people don't
know.
That's
a good idea.
So we're a free newspaper. We publish 16 times a year, mostly Benzie County stories. Every once in a while, we'll dip into Manistee or we'll dip up to Empire across the county line. We do 16 issues in a year, 8 during the summer from Memorial Day to Labor Day. It's every other week, which is quite a clip. It's hard for me because I feel like I barely get it delivered and then I have to start on the next one. But then it's once a month from September through May, and that's much easier, much more doable. Like I said, it's free. So people often ask us, how do you make any money at that? You know, I like to say it's not quite nonprofit journalism, but it's low profit journalism.
Okay.
but we do because we our advertisers pay for it. And so, people pay for an ad and that's how we're able to get it printed. That's how we're able to pay ourselves. It's how we're able to pay our writers. We have about 100 advertisers a year with a 75% return rate, which is really high for the industry, actually. And especially during a time when people, you know, all you hear about is these big publications that are having to close their newsrooms. And we have not had that, luckily. We have grown every year. And so that, to me, means that our advertisers see value in what we're doing and what we're bringing. Each newspaper is between 8 to 16 pages. I like to say that we do the fun news. There's already the Record Patriot, the Benzie County Record Patriot, and we're not trying to duplicate what they do, right? They're a weekly, they're mostly black and white with some color. They cover like the school sports and the local meetings, town meetings and things like that, right? They're like the real news, I'd say, in quotes. And what we are is more like feature stories.
Yeah.
So we have 2 pages of a calendar of community events. And then On top of that, we have, you know, depending on how big the paper is, 2 to 5 stories per issue. And they tend to be longer form stories. You know, every story is at least 2,500 words generally, and up to 4,000 sometimes. Some people have told me they think our stories are too long. Some people like them. Mm-hmm. I'm going with what I like to read. I like to read a lengthy, in-depth sort of feature story. They're usually 8 to 16 pages. The average is 12. The biggest we've ever done is 20 when we had a ton of advertisers during the 2020 election. And so back in 2014, we distributed 39,000 papers. This year we're on target to hit 75,000.
Wow.
So we've almost doubled in a decade, which is great. We deliver to about 250 places, I'd say, in and around Benzie County. You know, we hit Interlochen also, places like that. So people can pick one up. I'm actually working on our 15th issue, so second to last today. We have to go to the printers at 7 p.m., so I'm taking a break today to be with you guys. Oh,
and we truly appreciate that. Cool.
So, yeah, so goal for the paper, you know, next year would be to grow even more, to be able to tell even more community stories. You know, like I said, we get to do the fun things. We get to do the interesting people, places, events that are going on in Benzie County. We try not to cover anything that's too controversial. And when we're talking about community, again, you let off the hour about talking about community and community activism. And I'd say that if you read between the lines, you can tell what our politics is, but we're not in your face about it. And a real, you know, it really is, to me, something special when I hear people who I know are on both sides of the political spectrum. You know, I know people who are in the Benzie Republicans and who are in the Benzie Dems, and both of them will tell me, oh, I loved your last issue. I loved this. I loved reading this piece, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, that's really special because I think that if we had more local news and people focused more on local news, you'd be able to see that, you know, there are whatever your political leanings are, that's such a small part of the whole human being that you are. And so that's how we try to represent something. If I do a Q&A with someone, you know, it might be that one question is about, you know, their LGBTQ identification or something, you know, if they're wanting to talk about that they're in Benzie Pride, for instance, or whatever. And again, it's showing that your friends and neighbors, your local business owners, they have certain sections of them that maybe at the national level are incendiary, but that they're also doing all this good work in schools and they're also, you know, contributing in all of these different ways. And I think that local news is a way to bring those topics home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the goal of the newspaper, is to show people that there are so many people in Benzie County who have a story. Sometimes people will say, oh, don't you run out of things to write about? And I say, no, because... Mm-hmm. You know what? We have 17,000 year-round residents here and however many summer people, and every single one of them has a story. You just have to figure out how it is to tell it, which I think is what's great about what you guys are doing here, too. You're finding people to talk to and finding out what their story is.
Yes. Well, one thing I just want to touch base on is last year in, was that early November?
November
they did a reviewing of the 2012 People and the Olive movie in Traverse City. And of course, I'd like to say it was Aubrey that told us about it and said, come see this. This was just after in Israel, the bombing of the Gaza Strip, or no, the...
Yep.
I mean, all the happenings.
After the conflict. Yep, had happened.
The conflict started.
After October 7th, yep.
And it was an amazing experience. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in 2012, who I mentioned earlier, Jacob Wheeler, I went to the West Bank of Palestine. So for those who don't know, there's Israel in the sort of the center, and then Gaza's on the left, on the west side, and then if you're looking at a map, and then the West Bank is obviously on the west. And so I never was in Gaza. I wasn't in that part of Palestine. But I was in the West Bank for about 2 weeks, including and in Jerusalem. And so I was there. Basically, there's this nonprofit organization that's based out of Traverse City that's called On the Ground Global. and they are sort of an offshoot of the Higher Grounds Trading Coffee Company. So Chris Treeter, who owns Higher Grounds, is on the board of On the Ground, as well as like Timothy Young and a bunch of other local business owners slash just people, and also coffee people in the coffee world, was kind of how it started. And so they did in 2011, I believe it might have been 10, but I think it was 11, they did a run across Ethiopia. And it was about two dozen runners, I think, mostly from Northern Michigan, who ran 10 marathons in 10 days across Ethiopia. And they raised $250,000 to build two schools and I think a library maybe in Ethiopia, and for fair trade coffee company for fair trade coffee cooperative, people who worked in those and in that coffee industry over there. And so then a year later, Chris and Higher Grounds was selling Palestinian olive oil that was coming from the West Bank, and there's this amazing man named Nasser Abu Farha. Nasser is the president of the Palestinian Fair Trade Association, and he is the head guy at the at Canaan Fair Trade, which is they do olives and olive oil and other products out of the West Bank. And what he did is he's from the West Bank. He was educated here. I think he got his master's degree maybe at the University of Madison, Wisconsin, and while he was there, he learned about fair trade coffee cooperatives. And he was like, this is what my people need. Because back then, the Palestinian olive farmers were actually losing money. They weren't really making very much extra. And so he went back and banded them all together and created this cooperative. And so now the families are, you know, able to really provide for their families in a way that they weren't able to 20 years ago even. And so On the Ground decided that they were going to do a run across the West Bank, run across Palestine. And this was because the West Bank is smaller than Ethiopia. It was going to be 5 days and five marathons. The difference is the Ethiopia one was hot and flat, and the one in the West Bank was very hilly. So it still felt like it was 10 marathons from the runners I know that did both. They said it was harder to do five, but there were actually four runners from Benzie County, Randy Lynn Stoltz, David Gardner, Timothy Young, and then let's see. Oh, I guess I was the fourth one. I wasn't technically a runner, the fourth one from Benzie County. But then there was, and then it was a very small team. Jakob Wheeler was there for the media team. I was there for the media team. If people are know about Joshua Davis, who's a musician, local musician, who now works at Interlaken. He actually placed third in The Voice 2 years after the run. Josh is Jewish, and so he grew up in a home that was very pro-Israel, and so for him to get to see the other side was really eye-opening, and you see that in the film. So Aaron Dennis is a Traverse City filmmaker who he and Jakob were kind of the ones doing the film. Jakob narrates it, and Aaron's behind the scenes, and Aaron just does a beautiful job with all kinds of, you know, these panoramics and these views of the clouds, like these time lapses, in this beautiful, beautiful country. And, so there's the film that came out of that was called The People in the Olive. And it came out, we did the run happened in February of 2012. And I knew nothing about the Israel-Palestine conflict. I knew nothing about the history. I really should have read up on it more than I did, really, before I left. I knew the bare bones. And after being there, it was very clear to me what it was that I was seeing. And I mean, for instance, there's this wall that goes down the whole center, you know, all these different places in between the two countries. And really, Bethlehem and Jerusalem, you know, you think of them as two separate cities, and theoretically they are, but it's kind of like how, like, the Bronx is separate from Manhattan. They're both New York, right? And so the thing is that the same thing is true where, because of the urban sprawl that's happened, they would essentially, you wouldn't be able to really tell when you were in one or the other because they're so close together, and there's just all this, you know, all these buildings in between. But the thing that you can tell is that there's this wall that goes through the middle. And so there's a checkpoint. And so if you're Palestinian, you can wait an hour to 4 hours to get across. Meanwhile, we Americans got to go through in 15 minutes. I mean, it was very quick. It was just show our American passport and we get in, right? And that's for the Palestinians who are allowed in, who have a work visa or whatever it is. There are a lot of people who aren't allowed in, and they aren't allowed to go back. Even some people who we know who were born in Jerusalem, they're not allowed to go back because they don't have a work visa. So anyway, so there's a film called The People in the Olive. And originally, the run was in February 2012. The film came out, I think, in September. There was a showing at the state in Traverse City. And it was pretty much sold out. It was great. And then they actually did a showing here. There were showings all around the state. Like I attended one down at U of M where I was able to be a part of the panel for the Q&A afterward. But then there was a showing at the Garden here in Frankfurt in December that year. Oh. And so after October 7th happened, there were a lot of reprisals that were going on in the West Bank. So again, the activity that happened on October 7th happened on the Israel-Gaza border on the east side. Okay. And so theoretically, it shouldn't have anything to do with what's going on in the West Bank. But there were a lot of reprisals that were happening and settler violence that was happening. And there's actually a man who was in one of the towns that we started in the film, who was shot while picking his olives by an Israeli settler. And he was hospitalized. I think he's out now. It actually made the New York Times. But this, it was this very, very small village of like 300 people. And I recognized it. I saw the video and I was like, that's because there's one road into town and one road out of town. And I just said, I'm like, that's Tuani. And I knew.
Wow.
But anyway, so we felt very strongly, all of us who had been there, that we needed to help to tell the other side and to just show what our experience had been. And especially to support those Palestinian olive farmers, because it's very similar to the cherry farming that goes on here. Okay. You know, in that it's a farming community, it's a rural community, so it felt very similar to home. And it was difficult because, you know, if the cherry farm fails here, there are government subsidies to help out our farmers. And last fall, there were farmers who, because of increased violence towards their community, they were not able to harvest their olives, and they obviously did not get a government subsidy for that. Oh. And that was and the harvest is in October and November. And because of the checkpoints, there are only 4 olive presses in all of the West Bank. And so there were farmers who couldn't get through a checkpoint with their olives to be able to get to where the press was located. So they just, you know, were in the fields and just kind of left to rot. So we showed the film at the Alluvion last year. I'm hoping to be able to show it at the Garden this year. I've actually been in talks with them to see, just because things are still going on, and just be able to have a discussion, because I think that there are a lot of people who are like I was, where they just don't know a whole lot.
Well, that was us,
mm-hmm.
and we really appreciated that.
So before our next question, we should remind our listeners that we're talking to Aubrey Parker, community activist, about all of her activities here in Benzie County.
Okay. I know that you're a member of the school board
mm-hmm.
of Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us, you know, why? I mean, what drew you to that?
So, like I said, I went to Benzie, and I often have people ask me, why aren't you on the school board at Benzie if you went to Benzie? Because it matters where you live. And so I live in Frankfurt now, and so I can only be on the Frankfurt school board. Which is fine. I just, you know, people have asked that question of me. I think there's a lot more rivalry that other people feel that I do not feel. You know, I've had people be like, I bleed purple and gold. You must bleed red and white. I'm like, well, I do bleed red, but not because of Benzie Central, just because that's the color of blood. But no, for me, it's more just about, I believe in public education. I believe in supporting schools. I ran in 2016. I'd had people asking me for years to run for various other mm-hmm. offices, county commission or whatever. And I just wasn't interested in that level of government because for me, I think it moves too slow. And I've even seen that in the school board, where sometimes things move really slowly and I have to be patient when we're trying to get, you know, whatever initiative going. But I ran in 2016. And I ran for a 6-year term, and then I ran again. There was a 2-year term opening because someone had vacated, and so I just did that, and that was in 2022, and then I just ran again, and so I'm now on for another 6-year term. But I've ran 3 times unopposed. So what I will say about that, I won, but I didn't have anyone running against me.
Right.
And so what I would like to say about that is that I think that anyone can run for office, and I would really encourage people to run for local office. And even if you think that you don't know anything, that's fine. No one knows anything when they start. I thought I was going to be doing a lot more work with kids and teachers, and the fact is school board does very little of that. It's more about where do we allocate the money? What do we spend the money on? And then we kind of dictate policy and curriculum to some extent, but we more or less like tell the school officials, the school admins, what it is that we want them to do and which way we want them to steer, and they figure out how to implement that. We
okay. don't get that. I know you're involved in after school programs. Can
yes.
you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I used to be a soccer coach up at Benzie, and people have asked, well, why don't you coach soccer at Frankfurt? Because Frankfurt doesn't have, you know, soccer yet. Who knows if that'll happen? But and then I also am a cross country ski coach now out at Crystal Mountain with the Crystal Community Ski Club. And I love that. It's so fun. It's an amazing program run by Beth Major and Tim Furbacher. And they just had this vision. They'd seen programs in Minnesota, and they brought it here. Basically, there are these skis that you don't need an actual ski boot to wear. The binding is just kind of strap-on. And so they put skis at 7 or 8 different local elementary schools. So all 3 of Benzie Central's, Frankfurt, but then they also did like Buckley, Brethren, Manistee, you know, all these other school districts, local school districts. And we have kids trying the skiing at their schools on their playgrounds. And then once they get to 4th or 5th grade, they come out to Crystal Mountain and they actually get to put on real skis. And so I've been doing that program for, I think, 5 years maybe now. And that's really fun. And it's just a great way to get outside. I've been cross country skiing since I was little. I'm not formally trained, so I'm actually learning a lot from Beth sure. and Tim, because I just learned out my backyard with my parents. But because of my coaching background, I'm able to pick up how to teach sure. pretty quickly. But then there's also today I have art club.
I was going to just
busy.
Bring up art club.
So there's the art guild at Girl Benzie, which is run, my friend Jen Ryan got me into it. And it's a very small little board. It was because I had ideas for them to implement. You know, I said, hey, what if we put a piano in downtown Frankfurt? That could be something that the art club could do. And she was like, yeah, how about you come to the next meeting? So just be warned that when you have an idea and you want to see it implemented, sometimes that means you end up having to join the board to make it happen.
Sure.
But they've done various classes and things like that. But one of the ways this year that we wanted to give back is on the Frankfurt School Board, we had decided that we wanted to have a volunteer coordinator position.
Okay.
So we have someone, Chris Twigg, is working 20 hours a week to get these after-school programs going. And right now, a lot of them are focused on the elementary, but there will be middle school and high school programming happening. But a lot of that is because the middle school and high school have, a lot of them have sports practices after school, so there's less of a need. We would like to get there eventually, but for now, there's been a lot of focus on the elementary. So there's a chess club, there's a robotics club. Christina Ryan Stoltz is doing somatic kids, a somatic workshop with little kids, so they get to shake and get their wiggles out and feel their emotions that way. There's an art club that Signe Ruddy is doing with the little kids, kindergarten through 2nd grade, and then we're doing, the art club is doing, Art Guild is doing it for 3rd through 5th graders on Thursdays. And so basically, again, I was like, I can't come every Thursday and do this. I'm too busy. But I could do one day a month if the okay. rest of you could do one day a month. So another thing about community organizing is you don't always have to be the person who's there every single time, right?
Right.
If you have other people who are like-minded who can share that burden with you. So I'm going today, and today we'll be doing the project today. We're doing 5-minute sketches of everyone in class. So we would all focus on you, for instance, Carol. We would, Mark and I would draw one of you for 5 minutes, and then you and I would draw one of Mark, and then you guys would draw one of me. And so, and you get to take home the ones that everyone did of you.
And these are elementary
age kids.
Yep,
these are 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders.
If somebody wants to volunteer, I mean, say you'd like to read with kids or whatever, how should they go about getting involved?
Yeah, so on the website, there is a volunteer section on the school's website.
Okay.
On the Frankfurt School website, there is a section that is about the volunteer position that Chris Twigg has currently. And there's an email there and a phone number. You can just call the school, too, and they can direct you to Chris. You have to have a background check. And beyond that, you know, yeah, they have people who help out with reading during the day. I think they have some math tutoring that helps out. They're for this after school program, they're looking for people. So if you have a specialty niche or something that you're interested in doing, like we're hoping to eventually do, you know, maybe swim lessons, knitting, yoga, cooking classes. So, you know, the sky's kind of the limit. So if you have something that you really are interested in, that you think some kids would be interested in, you can call a school or get on the website and fill out a form and kind of get that process started.
Okay. And we're going to put together a little announcement with all that information, and that we'll regularly play it because, you know, winter is here. You know, today, I guess in Bear Lake, we got some snow. So people need some stuff to do, so we'll get that out there for you.
We'll do some good stuff.
Yeah. There's two things that I really want to talk about right now. The first one is this book club that mm-hmm. you are starting, and everyone is welcome to be a part of. Can you just give us a little synopsis of that?
Yeah. So I follow these two influencers on Instagram. They're political influencers. They're you know, mid-30s, early 40s like I am. And they have these amazing resumes. But now, instead of, you know, working, you know, one of them used to work for Chuck Schumer. And now, instead of doing that, they are political influencers. And they wrote a book this past year called Democracy in Retrograde. And it's essentially kind of a how-to guide of getting involved civically. And it's really nice because about a third of the book is talking about, you know, what does civic life mean, and sort of describing various things and how you can get involved and making you sort of ask some questions. And then there's about a third of the book that's workbook, where you actually answer questions like, what is of interest to me? How many hours a week could I potentially volunteer to a cause? Am I interested in local issues or am I interested in state issues? Maybe it's just that I want to meet my neighbor. I mean, they talk about how civics is really just about community. And they talk about this book that actually came out, I believe, in 2000 that people are talking a lot about now, which is called Bowling Alone. And it's this idea that between the 1970s and the 1990s, the most people ever were bowling. There were all these people bowling, right? I remember bowling going from school. But how, even as the numbers increased of people bowling, the numbers went down of bowling leagues.
Whoa.
So it's about how we've increasingly become isolated and lonely. Mm-hmm. And what happens when people are lonely, right? Like, what kinds of things manifest in a community when you have a community of lonely people who no longer know their neighbors, who no longer have a bowling league, who no longer have these people and places to be involved with? And so the book has a third of it is workbook, like I said, and then about a third of it is kind of like a civics lesson. And so there's a few different chapters about, okay, you know, what does that mean? How does the government work? And so I'm starting this book club I just kind of reached out to people that I knew originally via text or put it on my Facebook. But then also one of the authors reshared it on Instagram. And I have all these people from all over the country, 20 different states, Utah, Florida, wow, Tennessee, who have signed up. So we're going to have a Zoom part of it. So I have 120 people who expressed interest,
whoa,
which I thought I'd get maybe 20. Yeah. And about half of those are local people. So we're going to have a kickoff potluck at the beginning of December at Grobenzi, so that everyone can meet each other. And then we're going to break off into smaller groups. I'm not going to attend all of the book clubs. There are 11. There are 5 local ones, and there are 6 Zoom online ones. But I'm just kind of coordinating all of it.
Okay. And we will have information about that.